I thought, this is an opportunity to put my work in front of other people. Mm. And so I used it. And it was really helpful, because if you have a sort of thick skin and don't mind the criticism, you can use those early reviews to try to help you
Definitely.
Find which things am I doing wrong. If everyone's saying the same thing, this means I need to work on it.
Was it mutual then? What happened? I mean, this is
a... It was mutual, really.
It's an industry I know nothing about. So, yeah.
It's one of those things that if you come to the end of a contract, especially at the end of COVID, it was very hard to sell books. If your contract doesn't get fulfilled, they're not keen to re-option a new book. And then relationships break down.
I'm Farah Shamas. Welcome to Hotel Talk. We hope you enjoy listening to this friendly conversation between people connected by real life in hotels.
Welcome back to Hotel Talk. And today I'm so excited because we have an author, and not just an author, a best-selling author from the UK who's based in Cyprus. She's quite famous in her field. Many, many people know her books. It is none other than Michelle Adams. And what a lot of people don't know about Michelle is that she's married to a Cypriot, speaking Greek, living in Cyprus for many, many years. And she also wasn't always an author. She has a quite surprising turn of events that happened in her life that led her to the path of fictional writing. So Michelle, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
I feel very blessed. I mean, we met, we've got children at the same school, you know, my sister-in-law. Yes. And so we've known each other for a while. And I'm so grateful that you're on Hotel Talk with
us. Thanks for having me here. It's great.
So Michelle, your real life name is Michelle Theodoro.
Yes.
But you have your stage name within the literary world of Michelle Adams.
Yeah.
Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
About how we came to have a pseudonym.
Yes. Okay. I mean, I know many authors have it. And but tell us, like, why? What's the kind of idea behind it? And
It really comes from the way that I first started writing. So, as most people are aware, there are a lot of people that write and a lot of people that don't have contracts with publishing houses. Mm-hmm. And that was how my writing journey started. I started self-publishing books on Amazon and I was using my own name. Mm-hmm. And when I then was in a position to have an agent and a publishing house, they wanted to make a distinction between the books that I'd published to date, because they were all of different genres, to the new sort of persona going forward. And so we came up with a pseudonym, which was Michelle Adams, but it has no relationship to my real life in inverted
commas. It's not like your mum's maiden name.
No.
Well, it's quite good because you get listed at the top as well.
Which is why it starts with an A.
Yes. I like it. Okay. And then, so let's hear a little bit about, I mean, you've told me before, but you're actually got a medical background.
Yeah.
So how did you get into writing from that?
My university education was clinical science, which was something that I did well at school in. And so I went into that area and I enjoyed the hospital work. It was something that really I was drawn to all the way through my sort of educational life. But I had this passion for writing. I'd always wanted to be a writer. I'd always enjoyed books. But when you're 15 or 16 years old and you're trying to decide what you're going to study, if you tell people you want to be an author of books, they'll say, well, you need to find another plan because that's never going to happen. Which is kind of
a job that pays.
You need a job that pays. And you need a job that everybody can do or understand how you got there. So this is how I came to study science.
So did you always know you wanted to be an author?
Always. I always wanted to be an author. I was the kid that was reading their books under their bed. Like, that was me. I was always into writing, always into reading. But it's one of those jobs that you don't understand how to get into it. And I didn't really want to do something related, like I could have studied English literature, for example, but I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to write. And so because that wasn't the plan, I went in to study science and I did that for 14 years in the UK. I was working in a hospital. But at the same time, I was writing. It was something that
I always wrote.
Not always. I think I got to the point where I was about sort of 21, 22 years old. And I started to tell people, I'd really love to be a writer. And everyone said, well, you should write a book, but where do you start? It was kind of one of those hurdles that I didn't know how to get over. And I think it was when I was about 27 or 28 years old, I thought to myself, if I don't write now, I'm I'm probably never going to start. You have to make the first move, right? So I just decided I'm going to find a subject and write a book about it. And that was where it began.
And what was your first book?
The first book I ever wrote was called The Loss of Deference, which was a sort of dystopian medical drama. So they say, write what you know, right? So I chose a hospital as a setting. I wrote some sort of futuristic society. I don't think it was particularly well researched or particularly well developed, but it was the first step of saying, I'm going to go from zero words to a full chapter, to two chapters, to a full book.
It's amazing.
And I think it was about, I don't know, 75,000 words in total by the time I'd finished. And I had no idea about editing or how to then develop it from that first draft. But just completing that first novel was the push to keep going.
Yeah. Amazing. So how long until you, because you published several books self-publishing, didn't you?
Yes, yeah.
And presumably they did okay considering self-publishing.
They did okay. It's quite difficult to make traction in the self-publishing world because there are such a huge volume of books. When you have a publisher behind you, it's a little bit easier to get a foothold in, say, publicity or in newspapers, magazines, bookstores. When you're self-publishing, really, you're only on Amazon and it's whatever publicity you can create for yourself, either via blogs or podcasting, this kind of thing. But for me, when I started in, I think it was probably 2008 or so, I started writing a book. I didn't publish anything until 2012, and that was after I'd moved to Cyprus. And so there was that break in when you emigrate, suddenly everything changes. And so you forget about all of the other nice things that you like doing. You're trying to learn a new language. You're trying to find a new job. You're trying to settle into a new place. So I didn't do anything with the books for about a year and a half. And then when I realized that I could self-publish, I did. I had tried to get an agent with that first book. I sort of very naively sent it out and thought, yes, I've finished a book. Somebody will want it. And obviously nobody did because it wasn't that good. But it's a sort of a lesson learned. You start to learn about the publishing industry and realize, well, if this doesn't work, what does?
What does?
So let's keep writing. Let's try to improve. And then when self-publishing became a thing, I thought, this is an opportunity to put my work in front of other people. And so I used it. And it was really helpful because if you have a sort of thick skin and don't mind the criticism, you can use those early reviews to try to help you find which things am I doing wrong. If everyone's saying the same thing, this means I need to work on it.
Yeah, definitely. It takes a lot of courage to accept that, but move on from that and turn any negative reviews into positive decisions afterwards. That's amazing. So you obviously met your husband through your job as well.
Yes,
so everything happens for a reason, and that's why you ended up in that. So you met your husband, then moved to Cyprus because he's Cypriot.
We moved to Cyprus, he's Cypriot. And I think really being in Cyprus did help me with the writing, even though sort of when I first came here, it was difficult because I didn't have a job. I did. And then 2011, as we all know, here in Cyprus was quite difficult. There was the financial problems and the job that I was going to go into when I emigrated disappeared before I'd even started. So I spent a few months unemployed, which was really good because it gave me an opportunity to focus on learning Greek. I sort of settled in, found my feet kind of thing in this new environment. But because I had extra time here in the UK, I was working in the NHS. I was doing a lot
of on-call.
I was so busy. Here, I had a bit of extra time. And so I could think, okay, I'm going to use that to try to focus on the writing.
That's amazing. And how many books did you publish, then self-publish, before you had an agent? And how many have you published since?
Right.
And tell us a bit about those books that you've done since.
So self-publishing, I think I published six books, one of which was a sort of... it was a series of five shorter books, which was a sort of dystopian thriller type compilation. It was my seventh full manuscript that then got me an agent, and I've published four books.
Imagine, you see, everyone, practice makes perfect. Just keep on doing
it. I think I probably wrote a million words
before
I got an agent. But if you don't write those words, you don't get good enough to get an agent. I mean, some people do. Some people write that first book and it's brilliant and you get an agent and you publish it and it's great.
But then they might write the second book and it's not.
And it doesn't go well.
Yeah, so everybody has their own story,
Writing generally, and I think a lot of maybe the arts, it's about persistence because everybody goes into the arts as a nobody and you have to build that expertise.
And find your own style and own way. And
And in the beginning, it's easy to sort of look to your heroes or who you enjoy and even use their work as a way of understanding how to put things together. Reading for every writer is so important. Yeah. You understand how a chapter structure works, how the mm-hmm. chapters work together, how you can use metaphor and these sorts of things mm-hmm. from the other people that you like. And so in the beginning, it's obviously you start to imitate, you know, well, if I do that, then maybe this story will work. And if I do that, this bit will tie into the next bit. So it takes a while to develop your own style, your own voice, and to understand as well what you want to write about. Mm-hmm. I wrote in so many different genres before I understood that this is what I want to write, or mm-hmm. this is the story that matters to me.
Yeah. And then, so you found an agent, and then now you've published, is it?
Four books.
Four books, okay.
I published two psychological thrillers and two commercial women's fiction. Mm-hmm. I'm now writing psychological thrillers again, which is really, I think, the genre that I love
the most. That you love the most. Yes.
I mean, I have like, lofty ideas.
I read Little Wishes.
That's women's fiction.
Yeah.
I think thrillers is more, it's more my genre.
Mm-hmm. But it's beautiful. It was a lovely book. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it. It was a personal book because it was about when I lost my father. Mm. And I think sometimes you just have this story that you want to write.
Yeah.
That book came to me while I was on a 7 to 8 hour layover in Lithuania, waiting to get back to the UK because my dad was sick. So you write the book that you need to write at the time, but I think thrillers is more my genre.
I read a quote a few years ago and I loved it. I always remembered it. It was, we're all writers, the only difference, or all authors, the only difference is that, and we all get ideas in the shower. The only difference is the ones that write it down afterwards or not.
Yeah.
Because we all constantly get ideas, don't we? And then it's whether we capture
stories about everything. We tell ourselves stories about our life, about our families, about the things that we enjoy. And we're all coming up with ideas.
Yeah.
Some people.
That's amazing.
Write them.
So how have you found living in Cyprus? I mean, you've been here now for 10 years.
More. 13 years.
Yeah. And how is that? Well, whereabouts are you from in the UK?
Warwick is my hometown, so in the West Midlands, which is a very different kind of place.
Oh, completely different. It's, everything
is different. Culture is very different. The environment is very different. I come from a small town, which is medieval in nature. So there's a lot of old buildings. It's very green. There's a river. All of those things are not really like Limassol.
Yeah.
But at the same time, my town is very tiny. And so Limassol feels relatively metropolitan in comparison.
Yeah.
I think if you come from London, maybe this feels small, but for me, it doesn't because I come from a very small place.
And how did you find the move from the UK here?
I think when I moved here, I decided that I wasn't going to try to emulate any of the life that I had in the UK. Besides, obviously, from a professional nature, you try to recreate your work. I decided not to try to recreate the things that I had in the UK because I felt that if I try to, then it might lead to a disappointment. You have to try to, what does this place offer? What can I do here? And it takes a long time, I think, to settle in somewhere. I think for the first couple of years, especially with the language, you feel very stilted in the sense of you can't express yourself properly. You almost lose part of your personality in some way because you suddenly, you're listening to these conversations and you think about what you want to say. And then by the time you've thought to say it and how to say it, it's gone. So I think I was probably quiet for the first 2 years of being here. People probably didn't understand that I'm quite chatty and I enjoy that, but I couldn't do that when we first came here. But learning Greek made a big difference, and just sort of getting used to where I am and the new lifestyle.
And you don't miss medicine then?
I miss the hospital.
Okay.
I do like working in a hospital. I still worked as a scientist here in some capacity, but it's not the same.
Do you feel like you've still got that vibe though? Because obviously your husband's a doctor and so...
I mean, I still do some work for the office that he's got. But, I mean, we still talk about cases and things and I enjoy that. I'm interested in cardiology still. But unless I could work in a big hospital with a big department and all of the different disciplines, I don't think that I would want to do that here.
Yeah. It's something very different, as you said, from what you had.
Yeah. And not working for yourself after you've done it for such a long time would be very difficult as well. Not having that flexibility and being able to work as and when you choose to, it's such a luxury. And once you've got used to that, it's very hard to go back into working
employment.
In a team and employment.
Definitely. Quite a few questions I want to ask you. So how do you find balancing? Because you work from home, you write from home.
I do.
And you've told me about this before when we had dinner. So how do you balance that, like that discipline? Because home is kind of the mess is parenting.
Yes.
Like the your child and their friends and the cooking and the lunches and the snack boxes. And and then suddenly there's that peace and everybody's out of the house. Yeah. And then you got to really discipline yourself to write those words, to concentrate, to not go and do your laundry or whatever else is pending. Yeah. How do you balance, and what advice would you give to other parents out there who are also working from home as more and more people are adopting the hybrid formula for work? So
I think we've all had to get used to that sort of working from home thing for a while now, for reasons that we don't need to talk about. But I think it's exactly what you said. It's a discipline. And for writing as well, it's not something you tend to do as a full-time job from the start. So for me, writing's been a discipline for a very long time, because before working in a hospital, you'd be working from 8 till 5 or 6, or then doing all four, or 8 or 12. Yeah. But then when you come home, if you want to write, you have to discipline yourself to do that and use the free time that you do. Then it was easier. I didn't think it was easier, but it was, because I didn't have a family. Obviously now I find it very easy to get up, take my child to school and sit down. I'm never going to feel inspired because I love it. And I'm never going to find inspiration and things to write if I just think about it. I'm not, I think there are some writers who are quite cerebral in the sense that they can mull over an idea for 6 months and then sit down and write a book in a month, and they know exactly what they're going to write. That is not who I am. For me, the story is ground out in the process of writing.
Okay, so you have an initial idea and then it develops.
I'm trying to work towards being a planner because it's much more economical. And I have a plan for the novel I'm writing at the moment. But to date, I have been a very much a practical writer. I write and I write and I write. And somewhere in the mess of the words, there's the good bit, and then the rest gets deleted and you write more. And it's that process of writing that has given me the stories that I've made to date. So it's the discipline is just being at the desk. As for advice, I have no idea how to advise other people. But for me,
where comfy clothes, you were saying earlier.
Wear comfy clothes. I do get myself dressed and ready as if I'm going to a full-time job, even though I'm just at home. But by 8:15, 8:30, I'm at my desk, especially now school finishes earlier rather than nursery. Nursery was much later. It was much easier to be loose with the program. Now there's this number of hours they have to be used.
Does it help that you've got an agent and then you've got a deadline?
It does. It does help that you have an agent, because obviously you know that somebody else is waiting for your work. Without an agent, it's very difficult to sell your work. I've changed agents during this process as well.
And I was going to ask you about that, because I saw that on your social media. Yeah. Everyone, when you finished listening to this, you must follow Michelle Adams Writes on Instagram. I love it because you do funny posts and they're just all happy. I really like them. And I saw that you posted that you changed agents. What happened? I mean, why? Well, and what?
I think it's one of those things that's much more normal than anybody realizes. And I know I sort of went into having an agent for the first time and thought, I can never lose my agent. This would be a total disaster because then obviously you can't sell your work. So when I was in a position where we decided actually we're not going to work together anymore.
Was it mutual then? What happened? I mean, this is
a, it was mutual, really.
It's an industry I know nothing about. So, yeah.
It's one of those things that if you come to the end of a contract, especially at the end of COVID, it was very hard to sell books. If your contract doesn't get fulfilled, they're not keen to reoption a new book. And then relationships break down. And so I was unagented for about maybe 6 months, 8 months. And I wrote a new book and approached different agents and found a new person to represent me who seems to be really great. But I think it's one of those things that happen a lot. It's just that nobody talks about it because everyone's like, oh God, I lost my agent. I can't tell anybody about this. It feels like you've gone back like 10 steps.
Which is, it's a new opportunity. Every challenge is a new opportunity.
Yeah. You have to look at it that way. And it, for me, it was a really positive moment in sense of solidifying, what do I want to write? What do I want to write to approach this new person? And so it gave me a sort of moment for clarity.
And what am I good at?
What am I good at? What do I care about? Love? What stories do I want to tell? They say that the they in sort of inverted commas, they say that writers write the same story over and over again with the same themes over and over again. And I think that's an important thing as a writer, is to establish, like, what do I want to talk about? What do I care about? Why do I write these stories? And that's a really a moment when you sort of have to, when you have to rebuild or regroup. It's a moment to say, this is the person I am. This is what I want to write about. This is what I care about. Mm-hmm. And give yourself a chance to forge that idea in your mind. Because as a writer, if you don't have a vision for what you want to create, you just end up doing lots of random things. But it's nice to have a clear cut idea about what you want to do.
And then stay true, to your beliefs. Stay true. Tell us a bit about Limassol then. So you did already, but what's your favourite thing of Limassol?
My favourite thing about Limassol is probably the connection to the sea. I don't come from somewhere where we have the water near us. I mean, we have rivers and things, and I love the rivers, I love the lakes. Mm. But being near the sea gives you an idea of sort of like the passing of time, the tides, the seasons. You really see it in the sea, and I really like that.
Oh, me too. So your favourite quotes?
My favourite quote, I'm going to have to get it from the phone.
Do.
I have to read it out.
I love asking this to everyone. I also have asked people what the favourite book is or favourite author, but definitely we want favourite quotes.
Well, this comes from one of my favourite books.
Okay.
It's a book called A Little Life.
A Little Life.
By Hanya Yanigihara, I think is her name. And it's just a fantastic book. It's very long and it's very difficult to read in the sense that it's quite dark subject matter. It's about friendship. It's about these four men who grow up together, who fall out, who come together again, who forge relationships, friendships. They become lovers. It's really, really beautiful snapshot of what life is. So the title, A Little Life, is it really tells what the story is. But one of my favorite quotes from it is that things get broken and sometimes they get repaired. And in most cases, you realize that no matter what gets damaged, life rearranges itself to compensate for your loss, sometimes wonderfully. And I think that just really sums up what the book is about. It's about sometimes things difficult.
And life
is difficult. But it's the life that you've got and you have to try to live it and take the positive from it.
Yeah. I just gave a talk actually on happiness, and I said in it that it's the same story, it's just how we tell it.
Absolutely.
So we've all got a story. We can either tell our story in a negative way, look at things without being positive, or we can turn it the other side and look at the bright side and say, well, this is what I've come out of this with, and I'm so grateful, and move on.
I think sometimes people think it's like a sort of Pollyanna way of looking at the world, and that's not how I look at the world. But I do think that whatever's going to happen, you can't change it. Mm. So you have to look for how the story works for you.
Before I give you a bonus question to all listeners, if they read one of your books, which one would you tell them to use?
It's difficult because they're all very different.
And you love them all, I'm sure.
I love them all.
It's like choosing your favourite child.
But you can read, if you want a story that is sort of what we just talked about life being what it is and making the most of it, you should read Hidden Treasures. That's my latest book.
Okay. All right. There you go, everyone. You know what you're reading next. So there we go.
Okay, let's pick any. Oh, I think I've got two.
That's all right. Maybe it was meant to be. I'll keep one on the side. So who is the one person that you admire most? That's a nice question.
Who I admire the most? This is such a difficult question. I admire so many people.
Yeah. But maybe who was your mentor? Or
I think I'm going to say Stephen King as a writer.
Okay.
And I say that purely on the basis that as a child, he was the writer that made me want to be a writer.
Okay.
And he was the writer that made me understand what a story was and how it should be told. Mm. So, he's definitely the reason that I am sitting here today as a writer.
Oh, that's so nice. I hope he listens to this. I'm going to ask you the next question just because I feel that it was meant
it was
to be
fate.
That you pulled it out. Okay. So what are you proudest of in your life?
Probably my perseverance.
Oh.
It's not very easy for me to
give up. Yeah. Well, it sounds like it.
If you want to be a writer, that's the thing that you need more than anything. You can have a lot of skill. You can write a fantastic book and it doesn't find an agent and doesn't find a publisher. But if you persevere, you will write the book that somebody chooses.
Exactly. Or the world's just not ready for it. I mean, look at J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the story that,
she
I think we all know.
I think she had a 500 book print run, which is a really, really small print run.
And I think she was rejected by something like 40 agents. Yeah.
My first book was sold in, I think, 17 territories, and it was rejected by 100 agents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was only a few that wanted to read it and two that wanted to represent it.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody else said it was no good.
Yeah.
But then it sold in so many different territories.
Exactly.
So you just have to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'll tell you a nice story, actually. So my sister-in-law, your friend, was in Lebanon, and she had one of your books just out on the side table. And somebody came in and went, "Oh, you've read that too. I love Michelle
Allen." That's lovely.
And she was like, "What? You know, like, you know, this is my friend." And so I was like, yeah, all her friends had read it.
Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
That's
so lovely. Imagine even in Lebanon, people are reading your book.
That's a really nice story. That's lovely to hear that people have found it.
Yeah. Michelle, wishing you all the best, and to your family.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being on Hotel Talk. And everybody, follow Michelle on social media and read all her lovely books.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, dear. Thanks.
Thanks.
We hope that you're enjoying Hotel Talk. And I'd like to remind you guys, please, to click that subscribe button. It helps us more than you may realize. And any likes or comments that you can give us on any platform would be highly appreciated, because it helps us get heard and more exposure. Don't forget to hop along to St. Raphael Resorts and Marina's website. Join us on our journey with our Seahorse Club, where you can get exclusive offers and so much more. Or you can email our team directly, quoting Hotel Talk, to receive an exclusive discount on your next stay with us in Limassol, Cyprus. We'll see you all soon, and feedback is more than welcome. Thank you for being part of this journey.